is the Banner Baseball Show. Paul Mancano and Andy Koska. Paul back in Baltimore. Andy out in Anaheim, having just finished off an Uncrustable sandwich for his lunch. Andy, when I was in Kansas City over the weekend, I saw them displaying a brand new concession item at Kauffman Stadium, which was an Uncrustable sundae. You said, did that sound good? I think it'd be an interesting combination. It sounds like something a child would eat for dessert, but it also sounds delicious.
Maybe I am a child. That could be the answer. But actually, about it, I would totally eat like vanilla ice cream with peanut butter and jelly, 100%. If you like, you mix that into like a concrete-esque thing, sure. that would be great. I would eat
one, and if you throw some chocolate sauce on there, I mean, peanut butter and chocolate is always a good combination. It's right. Where the jelly comes in. It'd be an interesting mix of textures as well, because the soft bread, you know, whether they keep the Uncrustable frozen because you can just freeze Uncrustables,
right?
Or whether they warm it up beforehand.
They must keep it frozen. I would think that the bread gets in the way. I think the best way to do it is get rid of the bread, just go straight for the peanut butter and jelly. I mean, just think, you know, strawberry is a good flavor with ice cream. So I think it could be good.
I would endless like possibilities. It. Yeah.
Well, might love me back, but I would like it.
No, absolutely. Well, as Andy finishes off his Uncrustable, he's getting ready for game two of a 3-game series between the Orioles and Angels out in Anaheim. We have complete coverage, and Andy does, on thebaltimorebanner.com, where you can subscribe at $1 for 6 months. But on today's show, we're going to talk about the start that Albert Suarez had in game one of this series. We're also going to talk about Austin Hayes heading to the IL and Heston Kjerstad coming up to replace him. We'll talk about Jackson Holliday's continued struggles, and we'll finish off with a struggling Orioles bullpen. But first, please like, give us a thumbs up, a subscribe anywhere that you get your podcast. Write us a good review. Tell everybody you know about the Banner Baseball Show. All right, Andy, let's talk first and foremost about the calf strain that has landed Austin Hayes on the injured list. He came out of Saturday's game against the Royals. Midway through that game, was replaced with Colton Cowser in left field, and did not play in Sunday's game, was not available. And yesterday he lands on the injured list. It's a shame because he was starting to turn things around at the plate. You know, he started out so slowly, hitting 077 through the first couple weeks of the season. And it felt like he was hitting the ball harder. He was making better contact. He drove a ball to the warning track in game one of that series against the Royals. He was starting to turn things around. And just as that happens, it's unfortunate, he lands on the injured list.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough timing for Austin Hayes, who you know, has dealt with a lot so far this season. Had a, you know, illness in spring training, got sick again in Pittsburgh. Now here he is with a calf strain. The defense had been good even with the struggles of the plate. But as you noted, you know, started turning it around a little bit, even if the knocks didn't necessarily come, was hitting the ball hard. But now, you know, he's out for until April 30 at the earliest, I believe it is. I think that would be the first day he can come off the injured list. But you know, then we have Heston Kjerstad come up, and this is one of the great things that the Orioles have at their disposal, is that if they do have an injury or, you know, a slump or something of that nature happens, you have a elite talent pipeline, is the word that Mike Elias used many moons ago when describing what he wants to build in Baltimore. And here you have a guy, Heston Kjerstad, who debuted last year briefly. You know, it was okay in his, you know, first stint of major league time. And I mean, really, they could have chosen many guys in that Norfolk lineup, but Heston with 10 home runs and 30 RBI in 21 minor league games is a pretty good option to call up, you know, to the majors. You know, he's leading all of minors in home runs and has been on fire. I think he's hitting like 330 or so. But yeah, you call up a guy like that, it's a great, great solution, no matter how long it is. And the next question that we get to is if Heston continues, where does Austin Hayes go? But before we get to that, I suppose the next thing is, how often does Heston Kerstad play?
Yeah, it's a good question, because you already have Colton Cowser, who's a lefty who has shown that he deserves regular playing time. The milkman continues to deliver, as Ben McDonald would say.
Yeah, lefties and righties last night against
left on left homer.
Yep.
Yeah, phenomenal. Sixth home run of the season last night. OPS over one still for the season. Just one AL player of the week not long ago. So he is going to be in the lineup pretty much as Brandon Hyde can stick him in there. Yeah. But Heston Kerstad is a lefty, and he replaces a righty in Austin Hayes. You have Mullins, who's a lefty. You have Santander, who's a switch hitter. So how much playing time do you imagine that Heston Kerstad is going to get over these next two games, by the way, of this series against the Angels? You've got Griffin Canning, who's a righty. Then you've got Tyler Anderson, who's a lefty. And then TBD for the Oakland A's for the home series that the Orioles have. Do you imagine that Kerstad will be sitting against the majority of lefties?
Yeah, I do imagine he won't face too many lefties. But there is a great opportunity, you know, as you know, someone on YouTube just commented, you know, with Mountcastle's knee, has a little bit of knee soreness right now. Was available if needed last night. Was not needed. So against, you know, who knows, maybe if Mountcastle was out of the lineup against those right-handed pitchers a little bit more frequently, as he kind of recovers the next couple of days, there could be a great opportunity for Heston to slot in as a designated hitter with Santander in right field, or you could have Santander as a designated hitter with Kerstad in right field. There's a couple, you know, that is, you know, most likely his avenue to playing time. But still, I mean, I figure you don't necessarily call up a top prospect as Heston, you know, probably can be labeled to sit on the bench. We've seen it a little bit more frequently because the O's are in win now mode. So sometimes they're in a more platoon role to begin. But yeah, I mean, I figure that Heston will play against most of the right-handed pitchers, probably not the left-handed pitchers. You know, it took Cowser, you know, a little bit of really demonstrating success against, you know, right-handers, especially before Brandon Hyde said, okay, let's give him a shot against lefties, see how he does. And he's proven that he can be now, he's can hit really well from, you know, against both lefties and righties, does not need to be a platoon character. So we'll see. I think to begin, you know, Heston will kind of be in that platoon role, but it's, you know, especially with Mountcastle a little bit banged up, maybe you give him a couple of days and allow Heston to get some breathing room, especially today. You know, he will have just arrived in Anaheim, you know, long trip west from Norfolk, but you know, he'll be ready to go, and he could, you know, he could be in the lineup as early as today.
Yeah, it is quite a difficult spot to be thrown into for Heston Kerstad. However, he's proven himself to be ready for the call-up. 1.17 OPS down in Norfolk, as you mentioned, leading in home runs. I believe all of AAA, maybe all of the minors in home runs. The only reason he didn't make the team out of spring training was he had a slow start to spring training. And Colton Cowser absolutely mashed from start to finish. And it was going to come down to those two, we figured, from the start. And Cowser just beat him for that final spot over the course of a month. But that didn't in any way diminish in the Orioles' eyes who Heston Kerstad is and could be as a prospect. Like you said, Andy, if Kerstad comes out and hits the cover off the ball, just as Colton Cowser has done over the last couple of weeks, you might get into a difficult situation with Austin Hayes, because you really don't have room for that many outfielders right now. That is a bridge that I'm sure the Orioles, I mean, look, they're hoping that Heston Kerstad plays well, but they don't want to cross that bridge. The thing is, the way that the Orioles have been playing, I feel like on a nightly basis, I see the lineup get posted and then I see fans immediately clamor in the mentions of our account, in the mentions of the Orioles account, complaining about the lineup construction, and then the Orioles go out and score 5-7 runs a night. And the Orioles play matchup baseball. The Orioles like to give guys days off. They like to mix and match. They like to take teams by surprise. It works. What Brandon Hyde's lineup construction, his philosophy, and this organization's philosophy in putting together the lineup, because it's not just him, It works. And for about 3 hours between the time when the lineup is released and the first pitch is thrown, there's so much wailing and gnashing of teeth. And then all the questions are quieted by the end of the night because the Orioles have gone out and scored a bunch of runs. And then we start the cycle all over again the next day. When are people going to just sit back and stop criticizing the lineup the second it comes out? Is that ever going to happen?
It's never going to happen.
Yeah,
it's never going to happen. But I do wish that, you know, like, just think here. I mean, this is the time to be an Orioles fan, you know, just relax for a second and just enjoy baseball. You know, it's,
yeah,
the times are good. And you know, until it's proven otherwise, go with the flow. And right now the flow is, as you said, you know, matchup baseball and giving guys days off. And it made total sense to have, you know, when we knew that Ryan Mountcastle, of course, when the lineup came out, everyone was like, why is Ramon Arias at first base? There's usually a reason behind these things, you know? And we talked to Brandon Hyde and he tells us, yeah, I mean, Mountcastle was a sore knee. I mean, there you go. And
there's a reason for it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that it makes sense. And just to point out, Ramon Arias has played first base before. He did it last year a couple of times. And he also made really nice plays last night. He snared a line drive. I mean, he's a good fielder, you know? So it's not like you're taking away that much. Obviously. Yeah. Obviously, Ryan Mountcastle is a highly regarded first baseman in terms of his defense now. You know, that wasn't always the case, but now is. But Ramon Arias is no slouch when you put him over there. So sure. Definitely, you know, it's, you know, hopefully we all take a collective chill pill, including me. It would be nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about from the good to the bad and the struggles of the young Jackson Holliday, just 20 years old right now and one for his first 30 at-bats in the big leagues. The only hit being that line drive single through the right side at home about a week and a half ago, or a week ago, I should say. 16 strikeouts in his first 30 at-bats. And we had a little bit of a discussion in the press box the other day in Kansas City about whether you would send Jackson Holliday down and what the line is. How much does the 20-year-old have to struggle before you would demote him? And the problem that the Orioles are facing is that he is not just like Colton Cowser, who's a top 5 prospect, top 100 prospect, who they sent down last summer. He's not just like Heston Kjerstad, who is another top 100 prospect who, you know, made the big league team at the end of the year and then gets sent back down. He is the number one prospect in all of baseball. There is a crowd around his locker every time that he speaks publicly. There is just simply so much more attention, and the Orioles have so much more invested in this kid's development than they do even the other members of their top 30 prospect list. And so if you were to send him back down, how much chaos would that cause and how many questions would that create as to his long-term future? And I think the Orioles will try to wait as long as humanly possible for him to try to get out of this at the big league level before they pull the trigger on a demotion for Jackson. But what do you think?
Yeah, I'm caught in between two minds here. I'll start with the mind of you can send him down because, yeah, he's the number one prospect in baseball, but this is a farm system and a team that has really thrived on the fact that you might be a number one prospect, but you're just another one of these guys. And I don't think you can too much treat him differently than every other prospect just because his name is Jackson Holliday and because of the media, you know, for lack of a better word, shitstorm that would occur if you did send him down. Sorry, editors, for saying that. But it's definitely a case where, there would be a large number of questions raised about whether Jackson Holliday, you know, can cut it here, whether, you know, if the Orioles promoted him too soon, which of course we all clamored for him to be promoted before he even was. So like, that's on us. And I just want to remind everyone he's 20, you know, and this is, you know, the funny thing is, like, Aaron Judge is like one for his last 23 as well and has 12 strikeouts or something in that span. You know, it's like this happens. I think it's just more noticeable because it's happened at the very beginning of his career. But he's so young, and this is not a concern at all for his long-term future. I think he's the kind of guy that if you did demote him, it wouldn't crush him. You know, that's one concern you have is how will a player take a demotion?
Yeah.
I think a lot of these guys, you know, Colton Cowser was demoted last year, did not make the playoff roster. And he obviously wasn't happy about it, but he really went into hyperdrive of, hey, now I learned what I did poorly at the major league level. Here's how I can improve that. And he did. Now look at him now. You know, this is a instance where I think a lot of these guys, if they do get promoted, they'll lick their wounds for a day or two. They got socked in the mouth, and then they go back and they say, okay, I know what to do now. I know how to fix this. I know how to fix that. Or maybe you don't know exactly how to fix it, but you're going to try different things and you find a solution.
Yeah.
That's one frame of mind. So I don't think sending him down is actually the end of the world, even though the sky will be falling on Twitter and, you know, it falls every single day. My other frame of mind is that your offense is hitting well. You know, like this is a team that is not, you're not really requiring a 3-for-4 night every time from your 9-hitter. You know, this is the offense has proven that, you know, even with Jackson 1-for-30, you know, they're going to be fine. And I think honestly, he's going to learn the most by going through this. I think he will face these major league pitchers. He will struggle. He has struggled. He might continue to struggle. But hey, at some point, things are going to click. It's not like he's sitting there moping. I mean, I was talking to him yesterday. This is a guy that has a great head on his shoulders and is grounded and realizes that, yeah, this is not ideal. I mean, in the clubhouse yesterday, you know, he was sitting on the couch watching MLB Network, and MLB Network is doing a segment about Jackson Holliday playing and how he's been struggling. And I just was kind of, watching him as this goes on. And it's not like he's taking it, you know, too personally. He knows that this is a, you know, high intensity sport. You know, when he was in high A, he struggled for a little bit, maybe a month. Then got through it. But in high A, there's not cameras everywhere. There's not reporters at his locker every single moment he sits down. It was easier to kind of struggle out of the limelight. Now he is firmly in the limelight, has been for a while now. And I think he'd, you know, give him as much leash as you can until you think it's going to impact his mental state as a baseball player. And I think right now there is no sign that he is being impacted in that way. Let him keep running out there against righties. It's okay if you don't play him against lefties. It's totally fine. You know, you can, his defense has been fine. Play him against righties and bat him ninth and hope that at some point this is going to turn. He's drawn two walks now. The strikeouts are definitely a concern, but this is a team that has the leeway to allow a guy to struggle a little bit because everybody else is mashing the baseball. So I think if you ask me to pick one of my two sides, which one am I going to pick? I would pick, you know, let him stick this out. You know, he's totally fine. At least he's has convinced me he's totally fine with how he presents himself in the clubhouse. And I think he's going to learn the most by going through this.
Right. Like you said, he's not killing them. Offensively, they're still winning games. They're still scoring a lot of runs. And because he's batting ninth, he is really not having a negative impact on the offense that is sizable. The toughest thing to watch so far from his brief introduction to Major League Ball occurred on Sunday in the game against the Royals, where there were the bases loaded and he works a full count before taking strike three right down the middle, 94 mile an hour sinker. And it was like he didn't see the ball. He wasn't expecting the ball. That was maybe the low point of his 1-for-30 start so far. However, he played good defense at second base. He continues to play good defense. And then in his final plate appearance of that game, he worked a walk. So it wasn't like his confidence has been totally shot. I just don't think there's anything else he can learn at AAA. He is hitting the cover off the ball. hitting .333 with an OPS over 1,000 in AAA before he got the call up. He obviously was hitting great in spring training against a fair amount of big leaguers, was starting to hit lefties better, hit .313 in spring training. I just don't know what else he could do. And if you send him back down, what would he have to do to show that he deserves another shot to get called back up? And to me, it would be, if you're of the mindset that it is hurting his confidence now to go out there and struggle against big leaguers on a nightly basis, I think it would hurt his confidence just as much to be told by the organization, we were wrong. You're actually not ready. We're going to send you back down and you got to earn your way back up here at some point. So I don't think there's any real benefit unless he goes there. Now, there has to be a line at some point. If he goes 1 for 100, there has to be a line where you have to send him back down because you say we need to have a better option there at second base. And maybe his confidence does need to be restored by just seeing bat and hit ball. But they have not reached that point yet with him. And I keep waiting for him to break out of it, because all of the signs are there. The talent is there. The confidence is there. The mindset is there. And Jacob Calvin-Meyer of the Baltimore Sun, when we were in the press box, threw out the possibility, hey, the guy has hit leadoff for basically his entire minor league career. He hit leadoff a lot when he was a high schooler. What if you hit him leadoff? I think that would be a little crazy because he's hitting .035, but pushing him up in the batting order, I don't think would be the worst thing in the world, because the Orioles have proven that they, no matter what lineup construction they have, they can hit the ball and they will score runs. And maybe batting him ninth on a nightly basis is just harder for him to get into a rhythm because he's waiting so long to come up to the plate for his first plate appearance of the night. I'm not saying bat him leadoff, bat the guy, their 20-year-old rookie who is not hitting well at the top of your lineup every night, especially against lefties. But I think maybe giving him a higher spot in the batting order every now and again, maybe try something different in order to get him out of this. I would certainly do that before I would send him back down.
Yeah, that's not the craziest idea I've ever heard Jacob Calvin-Meyer say.
Look, the guy's full of crazy ideas.
Oh, I love the guy. And in fact, you know, he was the Uncrustable King. So going back to the beginning, it's almost fitting that we brought him up as we spoke about Uncrustables. He ate them.
That's true.
Every day in spring training. It was amazing. I thought he was going to become an Uncrustable. No, but I think, I mean, you both have a point there, you know, that you could try something new. I mean, have him against, you know, a starting pitcher from the very beginning and you know, see exactly what happens. You know, by the time a ninth hitter comes up, sometimes there's runners on base. Maybe he's pressing a little bit with trying to come through for the team with a runner on base. You know, if it's at the very beginning of a game, it's a, you know, 0-0 count. Nothing on the board. It's, you know, ignore the batting average and it's just, you know, guy against pitcher and see what happens. But at the end of the day, I'm not concerned about Jackson Holliday. You know, at some point, I imagine I will be concerned. If he's 1 for 60, maybe we have another conversation about this and we do change our tune. But right now, it's been fairly short amount of time. Guys go through these stretches. I mean, they let Austin Hayes battle through it, and he was on a similar stretch to begin the season of not necessarily 1 for 30, but like 3 for 30. You know, it was another one of those, you know, like, oh wow, you know, has not been great at the plate. I think you let a guy, if you believe in the player, you have him battle through it, and hey, they believe in Jackson Holliday. I think they should. Yeah.
And when it comes to comparisons for number one overall prospects, you know, Adley Rutschman, former number one overall prospect, came up to the big leagues. He had a triple in his first big league game, but didn't hit his first home run for the first 6 weeks, was hitting around .150 for the first 4 weeks, and hits a home run and changes things. Gunnar Henderson starts great in September of 2022, but struggles for the first 6 weeks of 2023, ends up becoming Rookie of the Year. Now, Jackson Holliday is going through worse struggles statistically than those two did. Certainly 1 for 30 is a whole lot more concerning than, you know, being hitting 150. You know, his batting average is about 100 points lower. However, the Orioles have shown that when the talent is this good and when they have made the decision, the tough organizational decision to bring a guy up, they're going to stick to that and they're going to give him every opportunity to get out of it. All right, let's talk. Oh, go ahead.
I will just super quick, you know, just pulled out StatCast and his average exit velocity by game. You know, this is fascinating to me because the first couple games he played, his average exit velocity striking out a lot was about 74 miles per hour off the bat, which is not a recipe for success. But then you look at, you know, as on April 19 was at 95, on April 16 was at 96, at April 17, you know, dipped to 88. Like these are those, if you hit the ball at 95 miles per hour or, you know, 80 to 90, you know, with upwards of 100, I mean, good things are going to happen. They're going to happen at a certain point. The fact that his exit velocities are so much higher right now than they were is, I think this will come around. And that's the last thing I'll say about Jackson Holliday.
Right. And who would you even call up to replace Jackson Holliday if you were to send him back down?
Connor Norby.
Connor Norby, probably. He's not on the 40 man. He is hitting 303 with a 916 OPS. So he would require a DFA of somebody. Kobe Mayo, another guy who is hitting 344 with an OPS over 1,000, but not on the 40 man. Right. So it would require another DFA. And it's funny because Holliday was drafted later than those guys, is younger than those guys, and hopped them on the organizational ladder and made it to the big leagues before both of those guys. And now we're talking about, well, maybe these two guys are more ready. Norby 23, Mayo's 22. But to me, that swap just would not make sense. I think when you see these guys come up to the big leagues, it'll be in addition to Jackson Holliday. I don't think it'll be swapping Norby or Mayo in for Holliday just yet. All right, let's talk about Albert Suarez, because you watched him absolutely dice up the LA Angels last night. So far, he has not allowed an earned run in 11 and a third innings, struck out 9 across 2 starts. Who saw this coming from the 34-year-old who had not pitched in a big league game since 2017 and was called upon at the last minute to come up and replace Tyler Wells in the rotation?
I don't think anyone saw this coming. Maybe Albert Suarez saw it coming. You know, you ask him and he has the confidence to say, yeah, I believed I could do this. But still, you know, the last major league appearance he had was in 2017. You know, had shown a velocity increase in Asia when he pitched in Japan and Korea beginning in 2018. But now, you know, here he is. He's sustaining that velocity. He's at like 93 to 95 routinely in the 94s. Just a phenomenal start. And the fact that last night he threw the four-seam fastball a lot, and that's his best pitch. But last night against the Angels, when he needed to, the fact that he pulled out his cutter and changeup, I just, you know, was really impressed by the changeup. And, you know, I wrote about once in particular last night, against Mike Trout in the third inning. There's a guy on second. You know, that's a scary situation for most pitchers when you have a guy in runner in scoring position and Mike Trout at the plate. And here, you know, here he was. He bowled in some changeups low and inside that Mike Trout swung through. It's pretty, you know, pretty impressive what Albert Suarez did. And I asked him about that plate appearance. You know, I was like, you know, it's Mike Trout, you know. And he was like, yeah, you know, I just kind of view every batter the same. I just follow the scouting report. And if I follow the scouting report, I'm going to get outs. It just he seemed so nonchalant about it. And I was like, but it's Mike Trout. Like, but he, you know, but he brushed me. He was like, hey, you know, it's Mike Trout. Yeah. So, you know, it was amazing to see. And I loved it. I loved the you know, attitude and the confidence from this guy. You know, who knows how long this is going to last, but man, it's a fun story.
Well, that's the question, is how long is this going to last? Because Tyler Wells landed on the injured list in Kansas City. He met with the media. He said he didn't bounce back great after a start against Pittsburgh and then made another start against Milwaukee and then gets scratched right before that start where Albert Suarez comes up a week ago. he hopes to return to the rotation soon, but elbow inflammation, doesn't have a throwing program. The last time we spoke to him, he was with the big league team in Kansas City. How many turns is Albert Suarez going to make in this rotation?
I'd imagine Suarez probably has at least two more starts in him. You don't rush a guy back from elbow inflammation, especially the fact that he's not throwing as of yet. We haven't talked to him since Saturday. So, I mean,
right.
It's now Tuesday. So, take that with a grain of salt. Maybe he has started a throwing program and we can follow up today, with him, with Brandon and with Tyler, if he has started throwing. But
right.
I don't think you necessarily rush him because suddenly you have a little bit of leeway because Albert Suarez is pitching as well as he had. There's not as much of a rush. I think you let Tyler Wells get as healthy as possible before you look to get him back into the rotation. Maybe Tyler has a rehab start or two in the minors, which would add more time for Suarez to keep doing his thing. But I really do think, obviously, if he pitches this well, you're not getting rid of Albert Suarez. it's one of those things where the opportunity has arisen that Suarez is taking it. Things have a way of working themselves out though. So yeah. maybe it is you don't want it, but an injury elsewhere that Tyler Wells then fits in back in the rotation. Maybe Tyler Wells for the time being is shores up a bullpen that has looked leaky as heck the past week.
Yeah.
That could be an area where Tyler Wells is really valuable in high leverage situations when you need a sixth or seventh inning guy that you don't have one right now. So yeah. I know Tyler Wells is very passionate that, he's a starter, wants to be a starter, views himself as a starter, but he also is a team oriented guy. He will understand if the direct path forward is the bullpen. He did it, obviously has done it before in his career, did it last year. If that is the way things must go, I imagine he could be a major boost for a bullpen that has struggled a little bit.
Yeah. Let's talk about that bullpen because Craig Kimbrel last night danced his way into trouble and then he danced his way out of it. Loaded the bases in the ninth inning in a 4-2 game, was facing Mike Trout with two outs and then ended up striking him out. But look, Craig Kimbrel has been awesome so far. He's the last one you would mention when talking about the bullpen struggles because he's got an ERA under one. I think he only has one blown save so far this season. He has been lights out in the ninth inning so far. It's a lot of the other guys that have gone through some struggles so far this year. Mike Bauman ran into some problems last night. He's got a 5.59 ERA. Johan Ramirez, who is kind of a long reliever and was thrown in a blowout game in Kansas City, gave up a bunch of runs. He's got a 9 ERA. Keegan Aiken was starting out the season great. His ERA ballooned to 4.66 after a rough outing in Kansas City. And Dylan Tate, a 4 ERA, not exactly sparkling right now. This is a bullpen that Brandon Hyde has admitted they're still trying to figure out because they are down a lot of arms. We knew they would be down Felix Bautista this year, obviously. But the injuries to the rotation have created this domino effect where Tyler Wells is not in the bullpen, whereas, I think the Orioles, if everything were right and everybody were healthy, Wells would be in this bullpen. Maybe even Cole Irvin would be in this bullpen. You've got the injuries to John Means, who is, starting out slow, not necessarily an injury, but the Orioles are slow playing him as he is down in Norfolk. You've got Kyle Bradish making rehab starts as well. And now you've got Tyler Wells on the injured list. Is it a domino effect where once those starters start to get healthy, then you start to see more guys like maybe Albert Suarez and Tyler Wells and Cole Irvin push to the bullpen and they shore the bullpen up? Or do the Orioles need to figure this thing out sooner rather than later with the group that they have?
I think it's a domino effect. I think, you'll push some of these starters that are, proving to be, good starters. I mean, Cole Irvin just had one of his best starts as an Oriole.
Probably his best one. Yeah. 6 2/3 scoreless.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was phenomenal. And if he can do that in two innings, that'd be great. And Brandon Hyde said again last night, that he's trying to figure out the sixth and seventh innings. And he said it's truly just it's not fair to Yennier Cano to have him pitch five or six outs. You know, he literally can't do it all the time. Like it's not possible.
Yeah. So, and you want him for October. I mean, you don't want to be using up Yennier Cano in April here.
Right. And so Yennier has been coming in, which I really agree with. I super agree with the way that Brandon Hyde has used him. I mean, last night he pulls in Cano to basically save the game. It was one of the most important situations when you have two guys on and no outs. Mike Bauman had just allowed a home run, then walked a batter and allowed a single. And you bring in Yennier Cano there, and you always think of him as an eighth inning guy. But this is, you know, I think Brandon was absolutely correct that is a huge situation of the game. And Yennier, you know, got the ground ball, got the double play, gave up a single, so one run scored, but it was not the disastrous inning. You know, that only cut the Orioles lead to two. You're in a good spot to hold on, and Craig Kimbrel later in the game holds on by the skin of his teeth, but held on and passed Billy Wagner on the all-time saves list. So, congrats to him. You have to think that this bullpen will shore up as some of the starters move into it. There is concern about I'm not really, you know, Johan Ramirez was a, you know, waiver pickup that I think just is covering innings right now. And if he can turn the corner, great. I mean, the O's would love it. But I don't think there is as much expectation on him as there was with Mike Bauman and some of the, you know, Dylan Tate, Keegan Aiken, to be key pieces of this middle relief core. So I think there is more concern with the latter three I mentioned than Johan Ramirez. Mike Bauman has struggled of late. I mean, it's as simple as that. He has phenomenal stuff, but the past couple outings have been a difficulty for him. And Keegan Aiken, as you mentioned, started the year so well. And I was out here saying like, wow, this Keegan Aiken looks far and away different than the Keegan Aiken of last year, who obviously was dealing with an injury, a lower back injury. I was really on the hype train of Keegan Aiken. One bad outing in KC doesn't necessarily change that. You know, absolutely can come back and start batting down the hatches. But something, you know, these guys need to figure it out. They probably will. No necessary need to, change everything right now. You don't need to swing trades right now. But I do think it's a concern. Figuring out a way to get the ball to Craig Kimbrel at the end of the night is a little bit of an adventure.
Yeah. Well, Brandon Hyde will have to figure that out for the next 2 days, but then he's got an off day, maybe to give some of those arms a reset before they come back home to face the Oakland A's this coming weekend. Andy has you covered in Anaheim. And of course, we have you covered from every angle when it comes to the Baltimore Orioles on the BaltimoreBanner.com. At AF Koska is Andy's Twitter handle. I am at Paul Mancano, and follow us at All Banner Sports as well. Please like, review, rate, subscribe, all that good stuff. We appreciate your feedback. Thanks so much for tuning in. We will have another episode of the Banner Baseball Show for you soon. For Andy Koska, I'm Paul Mancano. We'll catch you next time.